So in a way, this sermon was kind of hard for me to write. And usually when I say that a sermon is hard to write, that's because I'm afraid the sermon will piss someone off. That's not really what's going on here. I can't promise that everyone who hears this sermon will like it, but I don't anticipate too many ruffled feathers. You're a pretty tough crowd. I think you can handle the sermon. No, the sermon was hard for me to write because, you know, I wrote this sermon on an airplane flying home from a conference in St. Louis, Missouri, and I had a lot on my mind, and I wasn't sure how I was going to get all of what was on my mind onto the computer in sermon form. So in addition to trying to distill my musings on St. Louis, I also struggled with the fact that I had a different sermon plan for this week. And then after I wrote this sermon, it became apparent to me that I really needed, at least in some way, to address what happened this week in Washington, D.C. with the Kavanaugh hearings and the testimony of Christine Blasey Ford. And so I've tried to weave a lot of different threads together into the fabric of this sermon. And I was going for a cool plaid look, but you can be the judge. I also have to say that this bolt of cloth that is this sermon is a few yards longer than I anticipated. This might be the longest sermon I've ever written, so buckle your seats, dearly beloved. Buckle your seatbelts. Anyway, the first reason that I threw out my original sermon idea and wrote a different sermon had to do with this conference that I attended in St. Louis. The conference was a big event focused on teaching Presbyterians and Lutherans how to be better at the work of stewardship. Now, in church jargon, and just in case you don't speak church jargon, in church jargon, the word stewardship is usually a code word for fundraising. And so a lot of what we did at this conference involved discussions about best practices for fundraising and about best practices for talking about money in the first place. We did this because we need to support the ongoing work of the church. And in order to do that, you have to learn to talk about money. And so we went over the whole issue of talking about money and also how to raise money. But there also was a strong sense at this conference, and a good sense, that in the church we should do more than just ask for money and talk about money. Rather, we should work together in the church to build communities that are marked by gratitude and generosity, not just for the sake of being able to pay the congregation's bills, but we should do this because gratitude and generosity are virtues. They make us better people. They improve our communities and our broader culture, and by extension, they improve our country and our world. Well, anyway, after the conference ended, I had a free afternoon before I caught an evening flight home. And so with thoughts of gratitude and generosity in my mind, I took public transportation into downtown St. Louis because I thought it would be really cool to see the Gateway Arch. And I have to say that St. Louis is a perfectly lovely city, but my trip downtown was one great big lesson in what happens when we forget about generosity and gratitude, and how generosity and gratitude can so easily be replaced by dishonesty and deceit. So I left the conference. I took the hotel shuttle bus to the airport, and there I caught the light rail into the city. And about halfway on the trip, some guys got on the train, and they started pulling a three-card Monty scam. And I don't know if you know three-card Monty, but it's a card game that's actually a card trick involving the shuffle of three cards on a table, or in this case, on the floor of the train, and then inviting your mark, the person who's your victim, to try to follow a designated card, the money card, and to try to guess where that designated card is. In this case, it was the Queen of Hearts. But the thing is, you cannot win a game of three-card Monty because the dealer pulls a sleight-of-hand trick with the cards, making it impossible to know which is the money card. And if you follow what you think is the money card, you are guaranteed to lose every time. But three-card Monty is not just a sleight-of-hand trick. It's a hustle. And it works because the dealer always has a partner, a shill, and the partner pretends to play the game and wins a few hands and loses a few hands, but always comes out ahead. Then the folks in the gathered crowd start to play because they think it's an honest game, right? But they always lose. Or if the team is running the scam in a smart way, a few people will still win. You got to play the long game here, right? But these guys were not smart. The dealer and his partner, the dealer and the shill, got on the train at the same time and clearly knew each other. And while I didn't really exactly see the sleight of hand move, I could tell exactly where it was happening and when it was happening in the shuffle. Now, I've been doing card tricks since I was a little kid. I know how these things work, but it's not that complicated. Look, I'm from Mendocino.
Even so, it's an old trick, not done very well, and these guys probably fleeced my fellow passengers out of a good $200 in the space of less than 5 minutes. It was the opposite of the kind of generosity and gratitude we've been talking about at this conference, and not just because it was a crime involving the theft of money. That was bad. It was bad to steal people's money, but there was a spiritual component as well. Because the grifters were taking advantage of the really hard lives and dire financial straits of their victims. I don't think the victims were necessarily dumb. I do think it's safe to say that everyone wants to catch a break. Everyone wants to benefit from a little bit of good luck, an unexpected windfall of even $20 on the way home from a hard day of work. Keep in mind now, the three card Monte game started at the station where a person could get off the train and catch a bus to Ferguson. This is a place where life is hard. And the three card Monte team knew that, and they took advantage of it. They didn't just steal money. They stole hope. We have to learn to practice generosity and gratitude because we want to live in a world that is the opposite of a game of three card Monte. We want everyone to catch a break. We want everyone to trust in the goodness of games. We want everyone to have a reason for gratitude. And we want everyone's hopes to be rewarded. Now, the game of three card Monte was just the start. I imagine that several people here today have been to St. Louis, maybe you've even lived in St. Louis, and you have seen the Gateway Arch. It is a stunning installation. It's an incredible work of art, a mind-boggling feat of engineering, and a breathtaking example of mid-century modern architecture. I absolutely loved the Gateway Arch. But in many ways, its beauty is a lie. It's a lie bigger than a palmed Queen of Hearts in a game of three-card Monte. See, the arch was designed and built to celebrate the Louisiana Purchase and the opening of the American West to the empire building of Manifest Destiny. The arch itself is inspired by the victory arches of the Roman Empire, which is to say that the Gateway Arch is a celebration of genocide and ethnic cleansing and the destruction of languages and cultures. It's not really worth celebrating. There's nothing generous about what the Gateway Arch commemorates. The westward expansion of the United States was one of the biggest organized and murderous thefts of property the world has ever seen. This is not something that should inspire gratitude. So after pondering the beauty of the arch and the absolute depravity of what the arch stands for, I turned to walk back into the city, and I stopped into another beautiful bit of architecture. The old neoclassical courthouse in St. Louis, which is near the Gateway Arch, and which dates back to the early 19th century. I went there because it promised to give me information on the history of St. Louis. What I wasn't ready for was that what gobsmacked me was that when I got to the courthouse, I realized that this is the courthouse where Dred and Harriet Scott, an enslaved husband and wife, sued to be given freedom together with their children based on the fact that they had spent time living with their slaveholders in Minnesota, where technically they were not slaves because Minnesota was a free state. The court meeting in that particular courthouse ended up finding for Mr. and Mrs. Scott and their daughters, but the case was challenged all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, where the Scots lost their appeal, and that made slavery essentially the law of the land in all of the states, north and south, and it paved the way for the Civil War, which broke out a few years later. The Dred Scott decision was a travesty of judgment. And for Harriet and Dred Scott, it was the worst imaginable case of cosmic three-card Monty. The whole system was stacked against them. They could not win. In fact, they lost so bad that in their losing, every African-American lost. Those African-Americans who were enslaved lost because they could no longer win their freedom by escaping to a non-slave state. But even freed African-Americans lost because the Supreme Court found that African-Americans were not really entitled to the benefits of American citizenship. There was nothing generous, no reason for gratitude in the history of what came to be known as the Dred Scott case. And yet, on the day I visited it, the rotunda of that old courthouse, a space that really is quite beautiful, was grotesquely festooned with American flags and red, white, and blue bunting, as if the legal case that made the courthouse famous was reason to celebrate America or to inspire the kind of jingoistic nationalism that just cannot get enough of Old Glory. So what do we do? How do we be generous? How do we be a generous and grateful people? We live in a nation that was built on genocide and slavery. The legacy of genocide and slavery are still with us, creating an underclass of desperately poor people who long for a break, for a sliver of good luck. We are also creating a cohort of people willing to take advantage of that longing for personal gain. So how do we change that? How do we become a generous and grateful people? It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of dedication. And I don't even know if we can change the criminal theft that is memorialized by the Gateway Arch, or the criminal theft perpetuated by the Dred Scott decision, but we can choose to live our personal lives in another way. We can choose to be generous. We can choose to be grateful as individuals and as a community. And I suppose there are many ways to do this. But because today's scripture lesson comes from the book of James, from a passage that asks us to speak well, to say good things, to say true things, I believe a passage that speaks to the importance, should direct us to tame the tongue so that we say what is good. It seems worth going back to the idea that lying and deceit surround the lack of generosity and gratitude that I observed in St. Louis. In the game of three-card Monty, in the Gateway Arch, in the memory of the injustices suffered by Dred and Harriet Scott, all of these were surrounded, in my opinion, by lying and deceit. Three-card Monty is a scam predicated on the lie that a person can actually win the game. The Gateway Arch promotes a lie that the conquest of the West was a good thing. The jingoistic display of flags in the courthouse was predicated on the lie that the place where Harriet and Dred Scott's legal woes began as a place to celebrate America. The Bible in this morning's passage from the book of James calls on us to use our tongue for good, which means it calls us to tell the truth, to use our tongues to speak well, to say what is good, to speak out for justice, to call out the memories our nation is trying to forget. We must use our voices to tell the truth by naming the humanity of the native people the government displaced and those white settlers and the United States military killed. We must employ our tongues to speak truth about the ongoing effects of what happened to Harriet and Dred Scott, the slavery they and their ancestors experienced, the citizenship the Supreme Court denied them. We are still feeling the effects of that right here in Oakland, to say nothing of Ferguson, Missouri, where the train ride game of three-card Monty began and served as a reminder to me that the United States, under the leadership of white men, people like me, we've been working a massive game of three-card Monty, a scam in which Native Americans and African Americans and other people of color and gay people simply cannot win. And if the Kavanaugh hearings this week taught us anything, it is that the need to tell the truth is still ongoing. We still have so much truth to tell. And let's start here. The United States is still treating women like marks in a game of three-card Monty. Christine Blasey Ford gave an amazing, and from my point of view, entirely credible and believable account of an attack she experienced as a teenager. But it's still a game of three-card Monty. There's no way she wins this. The game is still fixed. Even if Kavanaugh were to withdraw his name from consideration, Dr. Blasey Ford has lost because America has believed a lie. And that lie is that a man's word and his reputation are more important than those of a woman. I think the American people may believe that we don't tell ourselves that lie anymore, but we do. We're just better at sleight of hand. We need to tell the truth. And here is a small but important truth. I think there is at least some hope. If, as I believe, the great lack of generosity and gratitude that marks the way the United States has treated and continues to treat Native Americans and African Americans and women and other ethnic minorities and LGBTQ folk, if the seat is part of that injustice, then I have to believe that the reverse is also true. If we tell the truth about our history, if we tell the truth about things like genocide and slavery, if we tell the truth about how we treat women in America, if we tell the truth about how we treat LGBTQ folk, if we tell the truth about all this, then I have to believe that such truth-telling will lead us necessarily into a greater sense of generosity and more gratitude. I believe that truth-telling is inherently connected to generosity and gratitude. And for that reason, I believe that Christine Blasey Ford's testimony, because it was a profound act of truth-telling, I think it was not just brave, but I think it was also generous. And her act of generous truth-telling will do more to make America more generous and more grateful than any number of hours spent coaching or volunteering. So we need to be like Christine Blasey Ford. We need to tell the truth. Telling the truth will make us more generous. It will make us more grateful. And here's the thing. This is the good news. We don't just need to tell the truth about difficult stuff. There are other truths to be told. Our truth does not need to be limited to bad news. We also should be telling the truth about how much we love the people around us. We need to tell the truth about how much joy we get from being in community. We need to tell the truth about how wonderful it is to go to museums and theaters and to eat good food and to watch wonderful sporting events. We need to tell the truth about how awe-inspiring it is to look out over the ocean during a winter storm. We need to tell the truth about how wonderful it is to be alive. And all these truths are important too. All these truths will make us more generous and more filled with gratitude, and we will be better for it. Our communities, our households, our church, we will be better for it when we tell the truth. I want to end by going off on a little bit of a tangent. Well, the tangent was originally going to be the whole sermon. I'm just going to summarize it. But I got distracted by a game of three-card Monty by the Arch in St. Louis, by the story of Harriet and Dred Scott, and by Dr. Blasey Ford's truth-telling. One of the things that happens when we tell the truth is that we become better able at recognizing the truth. And when we recognize the truth, sometimes it comes from unexpected places, but it's still true. Sometimes it comes from places we might consider to be a little bit suspect. The virtue of being able to see the truth in unexpected and maybe unorthodox places is affirmed in this morning's passage from James, by the way. In the passage, there's this really interesting thing that happens that I didn't notice until very recently. In the passage, James speaks about how the tongue can set the whole wheel of, in our translation, it's the wheel of nature, but it could be the wheel of regeneration, the wheel of birth and life, the wheel of fortune, that a tongue can set that wheel on fire. And what's interesting about that particular image is that it comes out of the mythology of the cult of Orpheus. It's a very pagan image. But James, who traditionally is understood to be the brother of Jesus and who is traditionally understood to be the most upright and orthodox of the disciples, this James was unafraid of using the image. He was unconcerned about the taint of unorthodoxy because he felt like this pagan image conveyed a certain truth. And so it is with us. We need to tell the truth so that we recognize the truth, even when it comes from unexpected places. Maybe that unexpected place will be from a different religious tradition. Or you know what? Maybe it'll be from the mouth of your crazy cousin who voted for all the wrong people and who watches all the wrong cable TV channels But maybe that crazy cousin will come up with something incredibly wise and profound, and you will recognize it because you are practiced in telling the truth. And maybe these truths, truths that you speak, the truths that you recognize, the truths that call out ongoing justice, the truth that names forgotten atrocities in American history, truth that rejoices in the beauty of creation, truth that comes from a variety of religious traditions, truth that comes from the otherwise crusty soul of your weird cousin. Maybe all this truth will lead us to be more generous and to be more grateful for the world around us. Who knows? I don't know. But I think it's worth a try. Amen.